is WGN-TV, Chicago. The following is a presentation of WGN Sports.
A year ago, everything seemed to go right for the Chicago Cubs. The bounces and ricochets somehow always wound up in the right hands, usually ending in positive results. The peculiar and the bizarre, more times than not, seeming to wind up in a victory for the Cubs when it looked like they had breathed their last. But the fate that seemed so prevalent in 98 has been eerily absent up to this point in 99. And there was no better example than the last play of the game yesterday, a play that would have found a way to scoot through the middle and tie the game a year ago. The one constant, though, has been Sammy Sosa, who has stepped up with an incredible encore to his record-breaking season of 98. Sammy tries to jump back ahead of Big Mac today as the Cubs and the first-place Mets look for a little relief from the heat at Wrigley.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time to remember that crap. And with us, to remember crap, as always, is Mike Donahue. Mike, how are you?
Good, Andy. Still recovering from doing consecutive playoff teams on this podcast. A lot of excitement.
I know. So I'm sure we're going to get a doozy this week.
Yeah, it doesn't leave too many good seasons left, but, you know, we did so many crappy seasons heading into 1998 and 2007. I got a feeling we'll head back there, but if we don't, then we don't. But
so we're running low on the 90s.
Really are.
Just 4 years left in the 90s. We got a lot of the 80s. The 80s are sitting there waiting for us.
I'm optimistic. I'm ready.
We still have three Dusty Baker years. We got a Lou playoff appearance.
Yeah, but not tonight.
We got Mike Quadi.
Yep, and the early Ricketts years.
And we have 11 is, no. 11's Quadi, right?
The last year, yeah, it is Quadi.
Oh, that's Quadi's full year.
Yeah, and that's a Ricketts. I think the Ricketts in this schematic is the last 2 years. Yeah. I think they bought it in late 09.
It closed sometime in 09, yeah.
So we can pile on them, even though this podcast is non-Theo, they're still part of this. It's mostly Tribune, but a little bit of Wrigley, a little bit of Ricketts. We'll get to them all.
All right, let's see what we get here.
We can't escape the 90s. We just can't escape the 90s.
Tonight, we're going to party like it's 1999. Yeah, it just wants us to wipe out the 90s, I guess.
It does, and I'm fine with that. You know, it'll maybe make it more enjoyable down the stretch. Maybe we'll, you know.
All right, so what do you remember? Five quick things about the 1999 Cubs.
We've talked about them so much. Just right off the bat, opening day third baseman was the 78-year-old Gary Gaetti. And the opening day starter for the first time was Steve Traxel. I can leave that as one fact because I'm sure I'll find out randomly. I'll tell you that we had a steady diet for about 6 weeks down the stretch after they were out of it. Of Cole Liniac at third base, who was traded for Rod Beck, our heroic closer from the year before. So that's two. Cubs were actually in first place in June and endured what, if Andy Dolan is to be believed, would be the first of two periods in Jim Ruggleman's Cub managerial career in which the Cubs went 20-50.
Yep.
One would have undoubtedly been 1999. I will say that it was the debut of John Lieber, so, you know, it wasn't all crap because John Lieber will go down as one of my all-time favorite pitchers, just how quickly he worked and how few people he walked and whatnot. So that was, you know, one flower in this otherwise pile of dung that was the 1999 season. Just to finish up, I guess I'll say that for the second consecutive season, Sammy Sosa hit over 60 home runs. I think he landed on 60, but that's my fast five for 1999.
So I don't know what the franchise record for fewest wins in a month is.
Well, March, maybe.
Well, in a full month. And this is a 31-day month. In August of 1999, the Cubs went 6-24.
Wow.
That followed up they were 10-17 in June, 11-16 in July, and 11-17 in September. Because they were, at the end of May, they were 27-20. It's cruising along.
And going up, we talked about Gary Gaetti's big home run the previous October against the Giants in the one game playoff. He had one more flash, and it was against the Indians, an intra-league game in early June. And I think the Cubs are either riding a winning streak or just playing really well. And it was a lot like, we haven't discussed 1985, but we have brought up 85 and this season. And 97 recently, just in recent context, to connect it to the current Cubs after they had endured an 11-game losing streak. The 99 team actually did not have an 11-game losing streak, but they were a team coming off a playoff appearance, like this year's Cubs, playing well, a little bit differently than this year's Cubs, because this year's Cubs had a great May and whatnot, but the 99 Cubs were in first place, like they were last year, like they were in 85 in June, before the wheels came off. But I feel like the high point was Gaetti comes up to bat in the top of the ninth in Cleveland against Mike Jackson, who was the Indians' closer, and he had been, been around for a while. He was the guy, of course, that we've mentioned that broke Ryan Sandberg's wrist in spring training in '93. And I could be wrong. I don't know if you're looking at it, but yeah, well,
effectively
it really
ended
it down.
Ryan Sandberg's career.
But Mike Jackson, and I don't know if I haven't pulled it up, but in this game, because I was in Florida on a golf trip, coincidentally enough, with some guys that I worked with, watching it in a bar, and Gaetti stepped into a pitch and turned it around on Jackson for a lead-changing go-ahead homer. The Cubs won, and at that point, I want to say that was when they were 31-22. That was their high point. They lost the next two games in Cleveland, but then I think they stole a game or two in Arizona. You know, we're into June, and we're thinking that 98 wasn't a fluke. And I don't know. I don't want to be too glib about this year's Cubs, but in light of the fact that some of our players might be leaving us, kids, if you're looking for a roadmap as to how to deal with the next 3 months, you might want to look at the 99. You might want to listen. You might want to listen to what we have to say in case you're looking for ways to cope. I don't know.
Yeah, so in that game, let's see, when did the Indians take the lead? The Indians took the lead. Cubs had a 3-2 lead in the bottom of the seventh with our pal Terry Mulholland on the mound.
Can I just guess? Did Matt Karchner, was he still around? Did he have a hand in blowing this? Because I want to. I just
no. I the other the other guy did the run.
The run fairy.
Felix Heredia. Actually, I besmirched Felix. I don't think he gave up a run. Mulholland got Jim Thome to fly out to center. Then Travis Fryman singled, and David Justice hit a two-run homer, and the Cubs were suddenly behind 4-3 in the bottom of the seventh. The run fairy came in, got him out of the seventh, pitched a he only had to get one batter out in the eighth, and then Rick Aguilera, who had been demoted from closer.
Already?
Yeah, he came in, he struck out.
He's just been acquired.
He struck out Manny Ramirez and Will Cordero.
Jeez.
Well, maybe it's this case of Jim Riggleman going, we've got it. We have to stop him right now. Maybe.
Five out save?
He took him out. So Tyler Houston walked in the top of the ninth off Mike Jackson. And then Gary Gaetti had a home run.
I remember. I was in a bar.
Curtis Goodwin pinch ran for Tyler Houston. That was not to be confused with his brother Tom.
Goodwin.
Probably not his brother.
Around the same era. Tom came a little bit later, I think.
The Cubs almost tacked on a lot of runs because that was with nobody out. With Jose Hernandez struck out, but then Lance Johnson walked. Mickey Morandini singled. Sammy flew out to right. Then Mark Grace walked off of Paul Ostenmacher.
Former Cub Paul Ostenmacher?
Yep. Then Henry Rodriguez struck out. So the Cubs had a tenuous 5-4 lead going into the ninth. They bring on Terry Adams to get the save. Struck out Tomey, gave up a single to Fryman, gave up a single to Justice. Richie Sexson pinch hit, a young Richie Sexson pinch hit for Terry Adams. Or for, no, for Terry, for Ryan Ardiaz.
A pre-brewer Jimmy Sexson, right? Because that's where he made his mark, right? Or am I confusing him with another tall goon?
No, that was him. He went to Milwaukee, and then he ended up in Arizona.
Okay. So Sexton loads, comes up with the base load, or he
with two on. Terry Adams, cool as ice, strikes him out, gets future Cub Kenny Lofton to fly out. Cubs win, and they never actually got into first place that June. They spent 3 days, one game out.
Interesting.
And this was one of them. They were a game behind with the win. They were 30-21. So that's nine over. That's the most they were over. They were also 32-23 and a game back after a win in Arizona. And
that's
what
it was. We should probably dwell on this a little bit too, the sequence in June, because I think a lot of fans remember some weird moments between surrounding those days.
Well, yeah, one of them's coming right up, right? The first game against the White Sox. They lost two games in the stretch that only lasted six innings.
Wait, are you talking about the next weekend? Was that against the White Sox? I don't want to talk about that because I went to all three games and it rained and it was horrible.
Right. Well, isn't one of those the Mike Caruso home run?
Yeah.
That's the sixth inning Friday game, right?
I knew you were going to mention the Mike Caruso home run. That's probably the...
But think about it. Now, this is perfect. Mike Caruso, product of the white flag trade.
Correct.
What are the Cubs about to do? They're about to get their own Mike Caruso.
Let's see if we can remember what that trade was, or one of us. I know that was that the Sox traded Roberto Hernandez,
Wilson Alvarez, and Danny
Garwarren. Yeah, and they got Caruso. They got Bobby Howery. They may have also gotten Keith Foulke. And there's another one. They got a whole boatload. It's actually kind of like almost like the Darvish deal, maybe, except they were a lot closer to the big leagues because Caruso was.
Nobody's ever traded a good player for younger people, younger humans than what the fucking Cubs did with Yu Darvish.
Right. That was
Cy Young runner up, who should have been the Cy Young winner, especially now that we know regardless. That not only was Bauer cheating, but he's also, beating up women.
Right, but you're not going to take away O.J. Simpson's Heisman either. I mean, whatever, but...
I don't think he should have won it in the first place.
I agree.
In fact, it's kind of ironic, right? So the top three vote-getters last year in the Cy Young Award, the National League, were Trevor Bauer, Yu Darvish, and Corbin Burns. All of them pitching in the terrible offense NL Central. And you only play teams in the NL Central and the NL and the AL Central. They should not have given a Cy Young last year.
Interesting.
Because you only pitched against, like, what?
That's right.
40% of the league? 30? I actually did the math. And nobody in those fucking divisions could hit. Nobody. So everybody had numbers. And they proved it in the playoffs when the Reds didn't score any runs. The Cubs scored one. I think the Brewers maybe scored two or three. And then the Cardinals actually scored runs, but then they blew the last two games in San Diego, which was very fun. But
it's satisfying. It was,
All right. Well, yeah. So they lose. So they're knocking on the door of first place,
which I assume is Houston. But regardless, they win the first two in Arizona. I see. Yeah. It was that Monday game where. So they licked their wounds after losing 2-3 from Cleveland. But you're right, they're two out. So that Monday game is when they're facing another loss in Tyler Houston, I want to say. Or no, it was tied. Right? Wasn't that the Tyler? I was pulling it up. No. See, it was back-to-back nights. That's why we were like thinking, they're going to do it again. Because both of the – right? They're,
all right, you want the
first game in Arizona and the second game in Arizona.
Do you want the full Mike Caruso trade since I haven't pulled up?
Totally.
It was a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It was an 8-player trade. The Giants traded. No, it was a 9-player trade because they don't list the guy who you're looking at. So the Giants traded Mike Caruso, Brian Manning, Lorenzo Barcelo, Keith Foulke,
oh.
Bob Howry, and Ken Vining to the White Sox for Wilson Alvarez, Danny Darwin, and Roberto Hernandez. So we had that.
Got it. We almost nailed it.
Caruso, okay. Who was kind of the guy they had high hopes for.
Yep. Because he batted 300 in this season, and he hit a fucking cheap-ass home run into the basket in one of those washed-out games.
Yeah. So he hit 306, 331 on base, 390 slug. It should have been a lot of red flags should have been going up everywhere.
No, I wonder what his BABIP was. It had to be.
He stole, let's see. Where is his BABIP? I don't see it off the top of my.
I'm still pained by that whole series. Yeah, when we talked about 1998 and what a glorious weekend sweep it was, and I went to all three games there, all in the bleachers, I think, when the Cubs swept the White Sox and Albert Bell ate an O. Henry candy bar. It was, I paid the price for that in 99. Also went to all three games. Sat in different seats around the ballpark and just watched the Cubs team that a week earlier looked like they were, you know, going to be there for a while, completely in the throes of just some shitty baseball. It was a very bitter pill.
So Caruso had 160 hits in 133 games in 1998. For the rest of his career, he had 134 more hits. He did lead the American League in one category. It was the next year, 99, this year. 14 caught stealings.
That's what God.
He was a 90 OPS plus in 98. This season, 99, he was a 47. And in his one other year in the big leagues, 2002 with the Royals, he was a minus 36.
Just a shitty ball player.
Just remember, guys, 100 is league average. Yikes. He was minus. He wasn't 36. He was minus 36.
And somehow managed to hit 300, which probably bought him another year and a half because people put that much stock in, you know, some of those traditional quote-unquote baseball card statistics. But he did hit a goddamn homer against the Cubs. I just wanted to follow that sequence because the season really did fall apart there after Gaetti's homer. They lose the next two to Cleveland, and they go to Arizona, who's only in their second year of existence, but who nevertheless will make the playoffs that season because they had signed Randy Johnson, for whom Ed Lynch was just outgunned on getting down the stretch the year before. And then, you know, in Arizona was pretty good, but the Cubs take the first two. They win one in their last at-bat on a Mark Grace hit. But then in the second game of the series, they're trailing by two in the top of the ninth. And in comes Arizona. You know, Terry Adams again had to get the save, but it was Greg Olson started, who was not bad around that time. But he ended up getting I guess it was with two outs. But Tyler Houston does come up with two outs and hits a three-run homer off of Olson to score Grace and Lance Johnson. Right. So they win two consecutive games against a suddenly good Diamondbacks team on the road in their last at-bat. And then they're facing Randy Johnson in the third game. All right. And so this is kind of where this is the precipice. This is where, I mean, it's not always that easy to find the exact point where a 95 plus loss team just completely went south. But it was at this point where Randy Johnson, who we've talked about before, we have talked about him on Bears casts, because who was it? Tom Brady had never lost the Bears until last year. Well, yeah. I brought up the comparison that Randy Johnson never lost the Cubs. And sure enough, in this game, he would not have lost the Cubs. He gave up six runs in seven innings. But nevertheless, Arizona was leading. They knocked him out of the box in the eighth before he could get an out. And they closed they were down 8-1, and they end up closing to within 8-7 after seven and a half innings. Arizona doesn't score. Cubs go to the ninth inning. That we're reaching the point where, you know, you could see, if you slow down the video, you can see where our hearts break. But for the Cubs, was it Lance Johnson, right? Glenn Allen lines out our buddy. Mickey Morandini makes it out. So Henry Rodriguez draws a walk. They bring in Lance Johnson, who was on and off a Cub, kind of injured. He was there in time to be, you know, their center fielder on their playoff teams, but not a bad player, but regardless, Johnson comes in to pinch run with two outs in the ninth inning. Cubs are going to steal another one, right? They just, they just, they, they, that's their thing. They won on Monday and Tuesday. And while Benito Santiago is at the plate, one dog gets picked off. The Cubs lose, and we think, all right, we'll bounce back. But no, the Cubs lost, and they completely plummeted from that point on.
That's funny. Before we get to the Sox series. So, yeah, the Cubs are down 8-1 in the top of the eighth. Randy Johnson's still pitching. Starts off. Sammy hits a home run. Glenn Allen doubles. Morandini triples. Scores Glenn Allen.
Knocking
Henry Rodriguez walks. And then run. Benito Santiago knocks Randy Johnson out of the game with a single. Scores Mickey Morandini. Tyler Houston had a RBI double. Manny Alexander had a RBI single.
All of these guys have been mentioned before, except for maybe Benito. But
yeah, okay. I mean, I'm talking about Benito.
Not as a Cub. He's been
Benito
brought up
was
before.
Benito was batting when Lance got picked off.
Which, you know,
and I believe Benito was actually like no. we were happy to have him up in that moment.
No, we were. He was he was terrible though.
But I and thought I he only, got off to a good start and then he just went.
I don't
he
remember
went
any
bad
good
when
start.
The Cubs did.
I just remember still Maybe being not. In my heckling days and going to a lot of games and just yelling, Benito is finito. I felt very resentful of the fact that he felt completely washed up. And you might prove me wrong. You might have a memory that's different. But my recollection is that they got rid of Scott Servais.
His final numbers were pretty woeful, so I don't know that he...
And terrible, right? And then guess what happens, though? And I'm like, fuck him. All right, whatever. Maybe he's old. Whatever. He, you know, it's not his fault. It wasn't lack of effort. He's gone. Eh, 4 years later, the guy's playing in the World Series for Dusty Baker. And then, of course, it becomes obvious. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, he just needed some restorative therapy of sorts.
Let's see.
Right?
Let's see what Benny
He was terrible. His numbers are probably worse than Scott Servais. That's the guy he replaced. And, you know, it made me feel bad for denigrating Scott Servais, who was not a good hitter at all, decent catcher. But Benito, I'm surprised to hear that Benito had a hand in anything positive. And my recollections of Santiago as a Cub are absolutely right. Nothing
I
but
had
negative.
I had it completely backwards. So in the first half, he hit .225, .286 on base, .345 slugs. So he was terrible. In the second half, he hit .307 with a .381 on base and .455 slug, albeit only in 113 plate appearances.
Okay.
But,
God, who are
I
they?
Remember,
who are
I they? Remember thinking that he had a hot stretch, but it was.
I was excited going into the season.
He had a hot stretch when they had fallen out of it. It was probably disoriented. Okay. He didn't have a zero on his jersey. Remember for the. He inexplicably, when he was with the Padres, changed from 9 to 0-9.
Oh, that's, vaguely. I vaguely did.
The Cubs gave him the shitty catcher number of 9 that apparently Randy Hundley had cursed because all the bad catchers were 9. Gabor was 9. Santiago got
Tim Blackwell.
Todd Hundley wore it until he switched to 99.
Yes, which just made it even more venomous.
Henry Blanco wore it. And then switched to 24 and completely turned his career around.
Hank recognized
the
negative energy.
The curse of 9.
Tim Blackwell wore 9, and he was terrible, really. I mean, you know, might have been a good defensive catcher, but basically brought a wet newspaper to the plate. I can't think of any 9s that would dispel that.
So the Friday...
Cubs Sox?
Yeah.
Got washed out,
Steve Swisher 9?
Yeah, he was an all-star, though, of course.
And isn't that why we decided that Randy Hundley had to finish wearing number 4? Because he came back.
That's right.
The
Swish
had 9 and couldn't give it up.
When we had forklift on the 77 Cubs.
So the sixth-inning game on Friday was not the Mike Caruso game.
No, it was Sunday. I could have told you that. And on Saturday, their backup fucking catcher, Mark Johnson, hit a home run to help them win a game. The Friday game, all I remember is that it was hot as hell, and the Cubs were losing when the rain just complete torrential. We were in the bleachers, so we were uncovered. Torrential downpour, and it was called, and that was it. And then Saturday was still hot as hell because it was just one of those periods in Chicago weather. It was humid and stormy, and they got the game in on Saturday. The Sunday game, though, I remember the Sunday game, and I sat in the grandstands there in my seats, and I had my dad, my brother, and my nephew. And the rain was so bad. I remember one time looking up at the stairs. In some areas, you can go up a ramp to the upper deck, and then other areas there were like stairs, and just like the cascading water that was coming down the stairs. We actually left that game because we thought there's no way they're going to continue. And Mike Caruso hit that stupid cheap ass home run after this absolute biblical deluge of rain. And I think the game was tied. You know, we left the game when it was tied. I know some people in my family might not approve, but it was just a ridiculous hot, wet weekend, and the Cubs were bad, and the Sox were bad too, but they pantsed us, so not one of our finest moments.
All right, so after the near comeback against Randy Johnson, they would lose 5 in a row. Then they would win a game at Milwaukee. Then they would lose 5 more in a row. So they lost 10 out of 11. So that's not good. They opened July with a 4-game losing streak, won a game, lost 2 more. They went cross town and lost on a walk-off.
99 Friday night, was that maybe it might have been Carlos Lee, but okay.
With a grand slam. But then they won. They had already lost the Crosstown Cup, whatever it was back
because
then.
Because they got swept, right.
But they showed a lot of pride. They won the last two games.
They beat James Baldwin on Sunday Night Baseball right before the All-Star break. I do remember that. Maybe their one last bit of redemption.
It was a walk-off of Terry Adams. It was Carlos Lee. It was a sack fly that scored Ray Durham.
That's what it was.
Okay. 3-2 White Sox win.
So, because another walk-off off of Courtney Duncan, I think, the next year was a grand slam at Sox Park. But,
I'm just looking at August.
Well, because they started making trades. I can tell you that at the trade deadline, their only assets that they were going to trade were Jose Hernandez was an asset, apparently. And they got rid of him. And I think that was the Mika Bowie, Joey Nation.
Yeah, it was great. Trade. Loaded up on all those prime Braves pitching prospects. Foolproof
plan. Right. They dealt Rod Beck for Kolinic, I know. It was just sort of breathtaking how quickly. I mean, it's funny that August was really when they fell apart. You would have thought it'd be July because, I mean, of course they're going to hang on to Grace and Sosa. They were never part of the discussion, but they were obviously giving up of their, you know, making those deals.
So here's how August went. They opened the month by losing a game to the Mets. Then they lost the first two games of a series to the Expos, so 3 in a row. Then they won a game. Then they lost 2 in a row. Then they won a game. Then they lost 6 in a row.
Interesting.
Then they won a game. They lost 5 in a row. Then they won a game. They lost 4 in a row.
They somehow never managed to have a losing streak of more than like 6 or something.
I think 6 might have been their longest losing streak, but they had a lot of them. I thought they listed with the longest...
6-24.
Yeah, the longest winning streak was 5 games in May, and they did it twice, April 28th to May 2nd, and May 17th to the 21st, and they had 2 6-game losing streaks, but they had a lot of fives. It's just a weird. I mean, they're just terrible, which could very well be what we're about to witness.
Well, that's what I'm saying, too. I mean, there might be differences in the analogy, of course. I do fear that that's kind of where we're at. 27-20 going into June. So, yeah, 7 under in June, 5 under in July. It just collapsing. I remember, the year before was when they went to the playoffs. And I think we talked because we did this just a few weeks, two episodes ago. Even at the time, I think we knew that 98 team was really not built to last. But, I don't think we could have foreseen such a drop-off like 2 months in. And I guess it happens. It's kind of an odd season in that respect. They lost 95 games, and they were, 12 over going into June. It almost feels like the 77 team, except that team finished 500. Yeah. Just, and then they would go right back into that. They weren't much better the next year. I mean, this, for historical context, this is just kind of how Tribune Company ran things in, during this time. It was kind of like, on paper, they weren't really supposed to be that awful, and some years they were because things didn't work out.
So I have a vague memory of this. Beck got hurt, right? And that's why they needed to trade for a closer, or his arm had simply fallen off as a result of what happened in 98.
No, they traded Beck because Boston was found him useful, and the Cubs didn't because they were already out of it.
Right, but here's the thing: they traded for Rick Aguilera on the 21st of May.
That's right. That's right. I'm sorry. Yeah, we overlooked that because I want to spend some time shitting on Rick Aguilera for that, for the similar for which we shit on Fred McGriff. So
Beck only pitched in 31 games for the Cubs. Now, given the way Riggleman used him,
he
would have pitched in 70 by July 1st. So he was clearly hurt, which is why they needed a closer.
That's exactly right. And the Twins had not been relevant since they won a World Series under Andy McPhail's sweater vest in 1991. And would not be relevant until shortly after this period of time, but they were just bad year in and year out. Aguilera was actually a hero of the 91 series. He'd been acquired from the Mets, as we've talked about before. We talked about the Cubs 1989 because the Mets were fighting to challenge the Cubs that year and dealt a young Rick Aguilera as well as a minor league prospect, Kevin Tampany, for the services of Frank Viola.
Frankie, and sweet music.
Sweet Viola. Music Viola. But that trade turned out to be a great one for Minnesota. Yep. God, they've been good with that historically. We talked about the
McPhail.
Well, he fell into one, I guess. I almost accidentally gave McPhail credit.
Wheeling and dealing.
Tappany was very good for the Twins. Aguilera, obviously, they won a World Series in 91. Aguilera was one of the top closers by 99. A little bit older, a little bit more settled in. Beck gets hurt. You're right. I'd forgotten that initially, but that was right. He was not in the same health as he was in 98 when he saved 51 games. And so Lynch made a move to his credit, and the deal included some guys that would, pitch for other teams, including the Twins. But there was I remember there was a hesitancy of Rick Aguilera coming over, like in a much more publicized way there was for Fred McGriff 2 years later, in 2001. And I just remember getting a bad vibe, just almost getting turned off. Like, why would he not want to, he delayed it a little bit.
Well, the reason was he got so the Red Sox traded him to the, or the Twins traded him to the Red Sox in July of 95. And then he came back that offseason to the Twins.
That was home.
And basically said he came back to finish his career with the Twins.
Tough shit.
And then 4 years later, the Twins were like, hey, buddy, if you want your money, you're going to have to go pitch for the Cubs and get your money.
Right. And help us out. They might have a good team. They didn't, as it turned out. Maybe Rick Aguilera was prescient. Maybe he knew they were going to fall off a cliff. But, yeah, I mean, that is kind of a rare, big May trade. And it was. Aguilera still had value because Boston had just tried to acquire him back in 95. And so his first game – and I'm going to remember – I remember this because I was annoyed as hell for a variety of reasons, which will become obvious in the next 2 minutes. But his first appearance was against the Marlins at home, in Wrigley. And in that game, he just – so here's a guy that was reluctant to come here, finally shows up, comes in for a save in his first appearance, one-run game. I also remember that this one rookie dumbass for Florida was involved in this named Kevin Millar.
Oh God.
Who had somehow made a remark earlier that year about, well, maybe the AAA team should play the real team because Florida, the year earlier had dealt all of their, and we talked about the, Piazza sort of rotating through Florida on his
Kevin
way to
Millar,
New York because
the scab.
He was right. That's right. I forget about that, along with Rick Reed in 2003 Cub, Damian Miller. Yep. So, but Millar was in this exchange. He had gotten called up, so he was relatively new. But in that inning, and Millar, I'm pretty sure, is the one that hit the ball. against Aguilera, where he hits it to the wall, and Sammy, who I was never obviously a fan of defensively, and sometimes just, you know, older, that was more and more of an afterthought, kind of jumped into the vines and didn't quite, you know, pull it out, and then just couldn't find the ball, and it ended up being an inside the park home run for Kevin fucking Millar. But I remember being more annoyed at Rick Aguilera for not coming in and slamming the door. I'm just going to pull it up just because I did find it while I was bullshitting about it. May 24th, 1999. Cubs, five games over, 23-18 coming into the game. They are actually winning 5-3. So fucking Aguilera, he's got a goddamn beanbag of a cushion coming in to a two-run lead. You know, he gets Dave Berg, not the hot dog guy, but the old catcher for Florida, to fly out to lead off the inning. Bruce Avin gets a single to left field. Future Cub nemesis Luis Castillo gets a single to left field. Avin goes the second. Not future Cub nemesis Alex Gonzalez, but the one that was also on the Marlins.
Seabass.
Hits a pop-out. Seabass hits a deep – it says deep second base to first base. Sounds like an infield fly to me.
Deep second.
Future Cub Cliff Floyd gets a base hit through the hole. It's short. Avin scores. Castillo's a third. Still, there's two outs. And Kevin Millar hits one that Sammy misplays into a three-run homer. It even says inside the park home run on Baseball Reference. I was more annoyed at Aguilera, though. You know, I know he didn't walk guys. It's easier to get pissed off at pitchers like Ryan Dempster, who can't throw strikes. He just got hit, but not a very good initial appearance by him. Pretty disappointing. Also annoyed that Sammy misplayed a, you know, fly ball into an inside the park homer. But that was still in May. You know, there was still optimism because this was a few weeks before Gaetti's homer in Cleveland and then taken two from Arizona. I did circle back and that because Rick Aguilera was brought up and I wanted to give it its proper context.
So Aguilar actually pitched 2 years for the Cubs. He pitched the rest of the year, and then he pitched in 2000. And then he hung it up.
Still bad.
His numbers, well, he won six games for the 99 Cubs. Your closer winning six games is usually a bad sign. how many saves did he end up with?
I would say so.
He only saved eight games. So it must have gone heavy Terry Adams, I guess.
And then,
he saved,
you know, Terry,
saved 29 in 2000 for that juggernaut.
We talked about Terry Adams, too, and how we had high hopes, or at least I did. And that I remember, like, by 98, I was done with Terry Adams. I'm actually surprised to see, or maybe I shouldn't be, that the brain trust was still continuing to sort of push the – because at this point, Terry Adams is his, part of his fifth season with the Cubs. If it wasn't going to happen – if it hasn't happened by now, it's probably not going to happen. So I'm surprised to hear that Adams, they threw
he's
him in.
He's actually one. So I gave – this is the stupid shit I do. I gave a lot of thought because when we did the 98 one, we talked about the failed Mike Piazza trade for the Cubs. And Terry Adams was a guy the Cubs were reluctant to part with.
He had a great
arm. Piazza trade. Now, it doesn't mean that they couldn't do the deal because they wouldn't give up Terry Adams, because I think even Ed Lynch – well, we saw the way he was just throwing guys overboard at the deadline that year – he would have done it. He would have eventually said, yes, you can have Terry Adams. But yeah, that was one of the guys that they, it was like Terry Adams. It was catching prospect Pat Klein.
Yep.
I don't remember if Ori was in the trade or not. Ori ended up being in the Felix Media trade.
Ori looked like a decent player. You know?
I think by Memorial Day 99, everybody knew he wasn't. But he was a bot.
Ooh, Kevin, you're talking about Kevin Ori?
Kevin Ori.
Or you're talking about, yeah. Well, he was a Marlin by then, too, because remember, Ori was traded in 98. He was the run fairy deal.
Oh, that's what I mean. So Memorial Day 98, because that's when that's about the time the Piazza trade
right.
went down.
I'm sorry. Yeah, he brought that up. Yeah, Piazza trade.
But yeah, there was. It's pretty easy to see why they couldn't get the trade done. And in hindsight, you look at the prospects. I'm sure Brant Brown would have had to been in the trade, and then that would have screwed it because they needed Brant Brown to hit all those walk-off home runs on Fridays. I doubt Piazza could have done it. Yeah. No. Actually, I guess Mike probably
He may have.
The 99 Cubs, no such concerns about season-altering trades.
No.
It wasn't going to happen.
how quickly they were out of it. I'm also surprised to see that they kept Jeff Blauzer around. I see his name on the roster, yeah. And I was like, he was such a bust, and we dumped on him, rightfully so, for being worthless in 98. Basically, Jose Hernandez, you know, pulled his fat out of the fire by being the shortstop down the stretch. But I guess they – because I assume Blauzer was a free agent signing. Good one. Good one. Good one.
Oh, yeah, they couldn't unload him. I mean, there's a reason Daniel Descalso was still on the Cubs in year three until they finally just gave him up.
Thanks for that.
Jeff Blauzer, let's see if it says what kind of deal he inked.
Did he even play? What I want to know is, did he even, yeah, I'm sure, of course it will. I mean, that Baseball Reference is pretty up to date on that. I just want to know, was it more than a 2-year deal? And if so, where did he sit around collecting his money in 2000? Because I know he was not on the Cubs after 99.
He, 99 was the end of his career. The Cubs did that a lot. They ended a lot of guys' careers.
I have to pull it up now because I want to see this with my own eyes. Because there's no way he only signed
Blauzer,
a 2-year deal.
Blauzer signed a 2-year.
Oh, okay.
$8.2 million deal at the age of 32. Seemed like a great idea.
32-year-old white shortstop. And you know, who knows? Did the Braves have somebody that were? It was probably no great loss. I'm guessing. I don't know who they would have replaced him with. I don't recall the Braves of that era, as great as they were, having excellent shortstops.
Ronnie Belliard,
that.
Right? Wouldn't that have been? Right. That have been Ronnie Belliard
other.
Time.
Ronnie was like the compliment to Jeff Blauzer, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, let's see. Who played shortstop for the 98 Braves?
If we must know. Yeah, by 2000.
Oh, Walt
Weiss. Yeah, they picked up Walt Weiss. It was
Walt
a pretty shrewd move, actually.
Wow.
Which actually shows you that they're willing to wave bye-bye. Well, they're about the same age, I guess, Blauzer and Weiss.
Oh, they also had the 98 Braves. Also had Ozzie Guillen.
I remember that at the end of Ozzie's career as a player. Yeah, the 99 Braves, they beat the Astros in the playoffs that year, I remember. The Astros, that was their third consecutive playoff appearance under Larry Durker. I think they lost the Braves all three times.
Blauzer hit .219 in 98 with a .340 on base and a whopping .299 slugging.
And he lost his job.
Bounced back in 99. Hit .240 with a .347 on base and a set .420 slug. He was almost league average that year. And he played second base, shortstop, third base, and left field. So they turned him into a utility player.
Wow. They put him in the left.
Oh, that crazy, a crazy Riggleman.
I think for the record, I don't want to assume that everyone knows some of the things that maybe we don't cover, but Jeff Blauzer is one of these unusual players who was by no means an above average players, and this is not necessarily something that can be backed up by data. In fact, it might be a false narrative, but it's pretty much been accepted that Jeff Blauzer was one of these less than great players who somehow still managed to just be a Cub killer.
Well, I don't know that it's so here's
did
he played
did
in 78 games against the Cubs. In 78 games he batted 262 times. He hit 15 homers, 48 RBIs. His slash line against the Cubs, .351, .413, .611 for a 1.023 OPS.
And amounts to like a third of a full season just against the Cubs.
The only other team he had comparable numbers against was the Rockies. He actually had a what is that? Well, 1,000th of a point higher OPS against them, 1.024. About the same amount of at bats. No, 50 fewer. He only had 10 homers against them.
Because he was in the league before they existed.
Let's look up. I think he also did a ridiculous amount of his damage at.
He did have a three homer game. And it may or may not have been at Wrigley, but he did have a three fucking homer game against the Cubs. And honestly, this is before 1999. Three homer games before like 1996. Or it might have been before even 96.
The, joining the Cubs screwed up his Wrigley Field stats because he played two terrible years there. So I can't good. Tell, but I'm pretty sure that his Wrigley numbers pre acquisition were also ridiculous.
So he was the everyday shortstop for a World Series team in 1, 2, 3, 4 different World Series.
Yeah, and in 97, the year of the season, his last season with the Braves, he was an all-star. He hit 17 homers, hit 70 RBIs, hit .308 with a .405 on base and a .482 slugging. So the Cubs were like, aha, this is it. Yeah, this is the guy. And the Braves were like, yeah, you had a great year. See ya.
Right.
Never a great
year. Not so much different than dealing with Braves pitchers of that era.
They had a pretty good handle on their own players.
Well, and the fact that they replaced them with like an exactly same aged Walt Weiss, I think is like, well, I don't know what they paid Weiss, but he was basically, it's not like they had an up and coming shortstop.
So the Cubs were trying to capitalize on their wild card appearance. They were the wild card champs.
First
98 wild card champs. Which
well,
is not
yeah,
a
there
thing.
Was no right.
Right, you got the single spot.
It was a wild card. You're right. They won the wild card by virtue of clinching it.
I'm pretty sure I owned a wild card T-shirt that just said Cubs 1998 wild card, because you didn't. You're not the champions. You're just the extra playoff team.
You made the dance.
So they looked at that team and they said, you know what we need? We need Benito Santiago. We need got to bring Gary Gaetti back. Cuz he's 40 and that's what we need. And we need to add, I'm trying to think. We need Scott Sanders. That's going to fix our pitching.
Oh, and Brad Woodall then too, right? Cuz like those guys both started games in the very first week. I remember thinking like, why are Scott Sanders and Brad Woodall starting on the first weekend of the season?
Well, now we didn't have there was no Kerry Wood.
Kerry was hurt, but they also picked up Lieber. One of Ed Lynch's few shrewd trades was dealing Brant Brown, even though Brant Brown's mistake, as we discussed, clearly did not actually cost the Cubs anything. I think it was probably best to get him out of town, thanks to Ron Santo. And they dealt Brant Brown for John Lieber, and Brant Brown didn't do anything in Pittsburgh, and Lieber was a goddamn rock for the next 3 or 4 years. So they added Lieber to, like, Traxel. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Traxel was due for his bad year, right? Because he was good the year before. Okay. So that makes sense. So they had Lieber. I mean, but the fact that Scott Sanders and Brad Woodall were starting that first week, I remember thinking, like, wow.
Yeah, so their projected rotation would have been
one of those guys was.
It would have been Traxel, Lieber slotted into the Wood spot, Tappany, the Farns, because he was still a starter.
That's
He made 21 starts for them that year.
And
Scott Sanders, I think, was supposed to take them. He had just pitched for he'd had a good year for the Padres, and had pitched in the playoffs for them.
He did?
Yeah.
In 98 or 96?
Oh, that's not right. I'm way off. Yeah, 96 he pitched in the playoffs for them. May have pitched their playoff opener. So by 98, he was off to Detroit, where he was not good at all.
He's probably hurt.
Check this out. This is the guy the Cubs. 98, he started with the Padres, ended up with the Tigers. His ERA for the Tigers, 17.69. Is that good?
I don't think that's good.
Scott Sanders, 99 Cubs, final year of his career. So the 99 Cubs ended everybody's career. No one wanted to play baseball after that. 98, the 99 Cubs featured one of our all-time favorite relief pitchers, Ray King.
Oh, Ray Burger King.
Yes.
Ray
have multiple stints with the Cubs or just one memorable one?
No, he came, this is kind of one, not that Ray King was great, but he became a very effective and well-compensated specialist.
And the thing everybody remembered him was his belly.
Yes, he was a chubby guy, and he came up with the Cubs. And I remember, like, all right, well, let's, left-handed, Brian Williams or Jerome Williams, and like, let's see what you can do. And then the Cubs got rid of him. I don't know if they even traded him. I just know that he resurfaced, and he was very effective for the Braves and Cardinals, I think. Ray King.
Yeah, he went to the, let's see how he got to the Brewers.
So he came got up for the Cubs.
Yeah. He got drafted. He got drafted by the Reds. He got traded twice before he ever pitched in a big league game. The Reds traded him to the Braves as he was the player named later in a deal. Ooh, here's a big deal. Chad Fox from Mike Kelly.
Oh, Chad Fox has been mentioned on this podcast.
Two-time Cub. Yep. He got traded from the Barbs to the Cubs for John Ratliff. And then the Cubs, he must not have made, well, no, this is April 14th. That's a weird time for a trade because that's post-spring training. But he got traded on April 14th of 2000 to the Brewers for Doug Johns. And then he was all of a sudden good.
Interesting.
He had a good year for the Brewers. He had a 1.26 ERA in 36 games.
Yeah.
He pitched for the Brewers then for two more years, went back to the Braves, finally got to pitch for them in 2003, so he pitched against the Cubs in the playoffs. Then 2 years with the Cardinals, then the Rockies, and then he was hanging on. The last 3 years, he's a lefty, so teams are still taking him.
That's a good call. I don't even remember him playing against the Cubs. He pitched in 4 out of the 5 games.
But he had a really good run from 2000, for 6 years, 2000 to 2005. He was one of the better left-handed pitchers relief pitchers.
He did well. He in three different.
Sure, the Cubs could have used him. That was sad.
Well, right. He actually was. He was a loogie, is what he was. Obviously, right? That's what Ray King had of it. But he was a loogie.
Yeah.
It's funny. I would have guessed that he actually would have appeared on multiple Cubs seasons, but apparently that's the only year in which he actually
10 games, right? That's all he pitched for the Cubs.
That's it. Why? It's funny that we remember him pretty well as being a former Cub, and there are so many other guys that played in so many more games that we would not even remember at all.
A future manager of the Houston Astros played for the 1999 Cubs. Do you remember who that was?
A future manager of the Houston Astros?
Yes.
Brad Ausmus never managed the Astros. Nope. Who the hell are we talking about?
This guy got dumped in favor of the trash can man, A.J. Hinch. That was Bo Porter.
Jesus Christ.
Played 24 games for the Cubs that year, hit 192.
I remember Bo Porter as a Cub. I totally forgot that he was Astros.
Yadi's brother, Jose, caught for the 1999 Cubs. 10 games.
I don't remember that. I remember the Flying Molina brothers before Yadier ruined that name for me because they're both Angels catchers in 02, right? And yep. Was this one of them? Or are there more?
There's just the three. Yadi, Jose, and Benji.
Right. So that was a former Cub, Jose Molina, playing against Dusty's Giants in the 2002 World Series?
Yeah, his 99 Cubs were his first 10 games of his career.
I never knew that.
He had 262, 316 slug. Let's see how he left the Cubs here. He played a lot of playoff games for the Angels. A lot.
Yeah. No, he had a hell of a career.
This is great. More great work by Ed Lynch. November 27th, 2000, released by the Cubs. Signed a couple of months later with the Angels.
Hey, Andy, it's okay. We got Todd Hundley coming down the pike.
And then he went on to play...
We got Joe Girardi and Todd Hundley coming.
He never could hit, but he was an excellent defensive catcher. He should have been the cheap ass backup for like a decade, but they just gave him away.
Yeah.
So Benji, there was a time when Benji was the best hitter, right, of that bunch, but he's also they were all fat, but yeah. Benji was the fattest. And then Yadi had a couple of years where he was svelte, and now he's just kind of...
I was going to say, I don't remember Yadi being fat.
Yeah, Yadi was fat. Young Yadi was fat.
Okay, all right, really?
Got himself in shape, and now he's as old. Benji was a career 274 hitter who hit as high as hit 295 for the Angels 1 year.
And which one played for the Cubs? Jose, right?
I believe Yadi's the youngest, I think. I think Jose's the middle. He is. Yadi's how old? 60?
Yes.
Yeah, he's 40, I think. Jose's 46.
Yeah. The others are, yeah. Okay.
So, there you go. That's more you ever want to know about Jose Molina. Who would have known we just talked about?
I've said this before. I'm pleased that we do this podcast because as much as I'm able to crack my own head open and just like let it out, a lot of the things that are there, useless information, I do learn things that I can now remember. And because I had no recollection that good old Jose Molina was a member of the Cubs. And now I can link him to the 1999 Cubs along with Bo Porter and Cole Liniac. So
Jose Nieves was a utility player.
Joey Snow.
Yep. We used to call him the Iraqi tank commander.
He had that really thin mustache, yeah. Right?
I think we may have also reused that nickname for Jose Valentin, but.
Jose Valentin should have either been Freddie Mercury or what was the other one?
I think
one?
We thought maybe he looked a little bit like Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, yeah. Or Roman Maroney. From Johnny Dangerously. I think that was another Jose Valentin. You fought against ice holes. In case anyone wants to jump on the Roman Maroney reference.
So do you remember that Andrew Lorraine made 11 starts?
I do remember, and he had one really good one that may have been a shutout that year.
He did, out of the blue. He did. He had two complete games. He was 2-5, and he had two complete games. Not sure that he won both of the complete games, but I would guess he won the shutout. It's hard to lose those. So.
I remember like having some sort of a Ryan O'Malley vibe. Was it Ryan O'Malley? Who was that pitcher like a few years later that like
the one who made the emergency start in Houston up, and then heard
shut
Ryan
down
O'Malley.
Houston and then disappeared into the distance like Shane.
Yeah. I think it's Ryan. Ryan, something
yeah, Andrew Lorraine. Yeah, he threw a shutout. I just looked him up. Look
Cubs
at that.
Had Andrew Lorraine and Steve Rain. Steve Rain made 16 appearances with a tidy 9.20 ERA.
Andy, much like Pat Klein, do you remember having somewhat high hopes for Steve Rain?
Come on, I'm sure I did.
You did. You did. We thought he might be the closer of the future.
It was tough. He pitched into tough luck. He only gave up 28 hits in 14 innings. And he only walked seven more and hit a guy and had 12 strikeouts.
Is a hip of 2.0, not a whip, but a hip of 2.0, is that bad? Is two hits an inning bad?
Well, it depends on how you pitch it.
Honestly, Steve Rain, this is going to be very obscure. He was the up-and-coming closer before Terry Adams. I'm telling you, 1994, 1995. And somehow Terry Adams catapulted himself over Steve Rain. And then got to fumble countless opportunities.
Wondered if Steve Rain ever have the Tommy John disease? That derailed a lot of guys. Let's see if he ever skipped a year here. Doesn't look like it. Looks like he pitched every year. His minor league numbers, 82 saves in the minors in 227 games.
Okay.
No, that's 227 games finished. How many games did he pitch in the minors? 331.
Wow. It's almost like the crash. Almost like the Crash Davis.
9 years in the minors. He pitched for the Rockford Cubbies. That's how 1995.
You mean you don't have a personal anecdote, Andy, of Steve Rain signing a Rockford Cubbies pennant?
I don't.
That was hanging in your bedroom. Yeah. I'm sorry. I mean, at that point, you're probably like 20, so maybe I should recharacterize.
Yeah, I was a college graduate by that point, so I probably wasn't. I don't know. Maybe my bedroom had. I was still living. I lived at home for a few months in '95.
We all did.
He was incredible for the Rockford Cubbies. 1.21 ERA in 53 games, 23 saves,
wow.
66 strikeouts in 59 innings. He was on his way. Next year, '96, even better. Pitched in both Double and Triple A.
He was okay.
At a 2.78 ERA, he had 71 strikeouts in 64 innings.
All right, so I mean, let's give him his due.
And then he just kept pitching at Iowa. 97, 98,
he was on our radar.
99,
though.
2000, 2001, and then he was off to the Brewers.
Well, at this point, he's also now got the Des Moines Chicago shuttle going on. He's appearing in the big leagues, but that all backs up.
Well, he only pitched.
You know what I'm saying? In the time, like, he was on our radar. Like, that was a guy, right?
Yeah, he pitched in 37 games in 2000. And then he was done. That was
terrible.
That's the only big league games he pitched in. Let's see.
Never made it back up. Well, sorry, Steve.
He got released in 2000. Must have signed a minor league deal with the Brewers because he pitched in Indianapolis, but he never pitched for the Brewers.
All right, so what's the body count on aging veterans whose last evidence of playing in a major league game was with the 99 Cubs? Well, we're up to like five now, I think.
So we know Benito Santiago went on to play forever, so he's not one.
Right, which he should have been the one that should have been done.
Gary Gaetti.
Jeff Blauser.
Was this it for Sandy Martinez?
It may have been. I would not forget
Sandy. No, Sandy played until 2004 with the.
Good for Sandy. See, backup catchers can be sneaky.
That's probably a bad guess to back up.
They can really. I'm sure it was in Kolenic's last season.
What about Jeff Reed? 36-year-old Jeff Reed.
No, because I brought this up when we did 2000. Joliet Jeff Reed hit
the
walk off on opening day after Shane Andrews, who I was surprised to learn was on the 99 team. I would not have guessed that. I'm looking at it now. I thought he was acquired in the offseason. Shane Andrews, of course, hit the homer in the snow off of Kerry Lighton on opening day in 2000. But he apparently joined the Cubs down the stretch in 99. I would not have ever imagined that.
So Scott Sanders. You know, that was it for Scott.
That's another one. That's right.
Rod Beck actually came back to the Cubs after that, although I don't think he ever pitched. Didn't he get stuck in Iowa?
He tried out in the 2003 Cubs, I thought.
Living in his camper in the parking lot in Iowa.
In Des Moines, yep. Did Matt Karchner pitch after 99? Yeah, he did, because he was still on the team in 2000. What a waste. Never mind.
That might be.
Well, then relatedly, I just want to get this out here. Jim Riggleman is the first Cub manager in our lifetime who at some point after managing the Cubs also managed another team. In other words, if you started watching the Cubs in 1979, 1980, 81, like you and I did, and every Cubs manager up until Jim Riggleman, when they were done managing the Cubs, never managed another team again. And if you could be like, well, between 1980 and 1999 is only 20 years, but the Cubs had a lot of managers in those 20 years.
Yeah, and so when did Riggleman when did he come back? That was in Washington,
quite a
right?
bit after.
Because
yeah,
I remember that was a talking point for Dusty. Because Riggleman had so he went through all those guys. It went all the way down. It went, you know,
Herman Franks, Joe Malfitano, Charlie Fry, Jim Fry, Gene Michael, Don Zimmer, Jim Essien, Bruce Kim. Well, that's later. Sorry, but yeah, none of them ever managed. No Cubs manager of record,
so
even
Riggleman,
a one-day manager like
Don
Joe
Baylor.
Malfitano.
So then Dusty has the job, and basically lamented out loud that this was where Cub managers' careers went to end.
Yep.
So that was it for Dusty. Lou never managed again.
Correct. Riggleman came back in 08, and that may have been before, because Dusty's first job after the Cubs was with the Reds.
Yeah, because Dusty managed 3, 4, 5, and 6. So it was 2 years later. Riggleman finally came back. But then even since then, so Lou, that was it.
Yeah, even since then, because now
Quadi was it.
Yep. It's just Madden, I guess.
It's fame. And then Ricky Renteria did.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah, even Renteria has.
Joe did.
Yeah, quite a bit.
And God hope soon, David Ross.
Well, I don't God, but not impressive that I have now. But, and then the other thing about Jim Riggleman, of course, this was finally his last season. You might ask why. How does a man who, manages a team to a .472 winning percentage, 374 wins, 419 losses, 5 seasons, and yet in those 5 seasons in which Jim Riggleman was 45 games under .500 until Joe Madden was the longest serving Cubs manager of our lifetime. Those 5 years were the gold standard until Joe Maddon came along, and they were still practically 50 games under 500. But it took this season for him to lose his job. What happened was he comes to Florida in 95 with Ed Lynch and Andy McPhail, and he's another Jim. He's another plain Jim, like Lefevre. All right, we're going to be, you know, I've said it before, mediocrity by design. We're going to be maybe good, maybe bad, not too shitty, hopefully. And he had a shitty season in 97 after almost taking a team to the playoffs in 95, and then 96 was okay until they crapped the tub at the end. 97, terrible. 98, oh, and then made the playoffs. Can't
it's really,
get rid of me now.
It's surprising that he – it's surprising he survived 97.
Yeah, it really is.
It had to have been that the Cubs were basically like, who the hell wants to manage this team? That's Jim wants to. Just let him do it. We really got to go. We'd have to take out an ad in the – I mean, I know the Tribune owns us. We could probably run the ad for a discount in the paper.
That was a reprieve. And then things sparked in 98. We've talked at length in 98. It's a fun season. Go back and listen to it if you haven't. Riggleman was the manager, and that bought him another – at least a full season.
Because
and
he sandwiched. 97's terrible.
Yes.
99% sure there's a 20. And
well,
50.
Again, no, but before you get there, go slice out those last, yeah, that last
well,
month of
we
96.
Learned that from this podcast. They
that's the 20 and 50 mark.
Yeah, the 14-game losing streak is not enough. Because then wouldn't we figure they lost like 16 of the last 18 games or something?
Yeah, I believe
before?
That's correct.
So
yeah,
they go
insane.
2 and 30. So clearly that's where the 20 and 50 stretch is.
Yes,
it starts at the end of 96.
It's not within one season, right?
And then it goes into 97, and then it happens again in 99.
Yep.
And it took the second one to actually get, and he didn't get fired until after the season. They didn't launch him during the year.
No, they let him finish. Right. Yeah, and that's when they started to go bold. They started to, you know, they actually went for big time, you know, high profile fires. Hires. They went with Don Baylor after Riggleman. They went with Dusty after him, and Pinella after him. But until that point, he was kind of the last of these sort of milquetoast. You know, they were perfect. Jim Riggleman was perfect for a while for that level of Tribune ownership.
Well,
you know,
the irony is he's basically the kind of manager they want now.
Oh, that's a good point.
The guy who is just kind of keep the players from killing each other in the clubhouse.
That's a good point.
And execute the game plan we give you. And we see how well it works with David Ross. Who I don't think is a – I don't think – it's hard to tell. I don't think he's a bad manager. But
no.
If he doesn't think he's going to get swept up in this rebuild and chucked out on the other end, he's full of shit.
Yep.
There's no way they're going to be horribly bad the rest of this year, which is going to, and if they don't do some ridiculous like 2013 Red Sox thing where they go from being terrible in 1 year and all of a sudden they're like, you know, they're in first place for a lot of the next year. It's all this shit will start to fall on him because you're not going to be able to blame it on the players because all the good guys are gone and you're
right.
Trying to build. So then somebody's got to get blamed and the manager is next in line. He's the one who gets blamed.
Well, that's the common thread for all these years that we're covering, ultimately. I mean,
well, that's, you know, it's easier to fire the manager than to fire all the players.
General managers stay around longer than managers, and so do most players. So
general managers typically get to hire two managers.
I think so. And if you're Larry Himes, you're going to burn through that as quickly as you can.
Yeah, which doesn't make any sense. You have you have one card to play to save your ass, and you can't play it that early.
And that's probably what made Ed Lynch. We're talking about the 99 Cubs. That's probably what helped Ed Lynch stick around as long as he did, in spite of the fact that he had produced no talent by this time. This is now his fifth season.
So it would be interesting.
He managed to ride one manager this whole way.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Well, he gets fired in 2000, right?
The next year, correct. He hired the new manager.
That's what I was going to ask. I wonder how much input he had into Baylor, because that's a window into your job security.
That's true.
If Andy McPhail goes ahead and hires the new manager for you, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You're the next guy off the boat. If you have say in it, then you're probably okay. But he didn't make it, he made it 3 months into the season and he's gone.
Yep.
They were handing the reins over to, I mean, Andy had the title, but Jim Hendry was doing the job.
Exactly. And from a Tribune perspective, it was business as usual. As long as the optics are good, you know, try to compete a little bit better than you did then, Ed Lynch and Jim Riggleman. I mean, yeah, the 98 team, the 95 team, and then, yeah, it's just a whole lot of disposable players in that period.
99 Cubs had Bobby Ayala.
I don't recall Bobby Ayala. Should I know that name?
Bobby Ayala pitched for the Mariners.
I'm not an American League guy. I'm kind of ignorant there.
He was always a relief pitcher. In 1997, he won 10 games out of the bullpen and had 8 saves.
Wow.
Oh, he's another guy you can add to the list. 29 years old, his final games were for the Cubs.
Oh, yes. I'm looking at it now.
13 games with a 2.81 ERA, and he never pitched again.
He's in minus 1.6 WAR. I give you credit for remembering Bobby Ayala. I have no recollection of him. But you're right. That's another guy, you know, again, you know, a lot of players was their last stop. And Riggleman somehow reversed the trend of that being his last stop. But, you know,
well, but that's neither here. I mean, Riggleman. So he gets the job in Washington.
And then talked about this.
And then quits.
He shit the toe, or he overplayed his hand, I should say, right?
Yeah. He demanded a contract extension. They didn't.
You
give
mentioned
it to him,
that and he quit. They brought Davey down and figured, and Davey didn't actually do a much better job right away, but he did take him to the playoffs. And yeah, you know, I had no ill will towards Jim Riggleman.
No.
He was fine. I would have wished him well as long as his team wasn't competing against the Cubs, and he never really seemed to. He really blew it with Washington. I think that was a real misplay, really.
Yeah. I mean, they were starting to get good. They weren't there yet.
Right.
They, in fact,
I know.
He had a ground floor. He wasn't and then Davey wasn't the interim, right? They gave Davey, the plan was for Davey to take over the next year, and he did.
And he did.
Because he was a consultant. Matt Williams.
Yeah, no, it was a real ground floor opportunity for him late in his career. I mean, he could have been like, you know, it was an opportunity that was probably missed, I would have to say.
Do you remember the Davey Johnson, Ryan Sandberg connection?
I don't. They're both second basemen that hit 40 homers in a season.
Yes, they were.
Perhaps
Ryan was the first guy since Dave to do it.
I'm sure Jeff Kent had done it since then, though, right?
It was a long gap, and it went from Dave Johnson to Ryan Sandberg. So let's see. Davey, maybe he did come down. Oh, that's right. Okay. So for the Nats, somebody managed in between Riggleman. John McLaren got to manage 3 games, and then Dave Johnson took over. And actually, I think we talked about this. Riggleman had a better record with the 11 Nats than Dave did, but then
Dave
took him to the playoffs the next year. So,
but 12 is the critical year. Yeah,
they shit the bet against the Cardinals.
Well,
right?
They shit the bet against the Cardinals twice, it was that was the game where Gio Gonzalez had a 5-run lead in Game 5 and walked a whole bunch of guys.
Yeah, and then didn't. Who was their shitbag closer that blew it?
God, I can't remember now. But I don't even blame him. I blame Gio Gonzalez for that Game 5.
I wonder if it was...
Who the hell was their closer? That's driving me crazy.
Maybe that wasn't that year. Maybe that was the next one.
John Wetland? No, I'm sorry.
He used Tyler Clippard and Craig Stammen. But who's the other guy? Drew Storen? Wasn't that a guy?
Yeah.
Now I'm just pulling names out.
Well, I feel like that may have been later, too.
Yeah, I think that was... Let's see.
It was somebody well-known.
It was Drew Storen.
It was.
Drew Storen. He blew Game 5.
Yeah, but it was really Gio Gonzalez.
Yeah. Nice. We're not. We're kind of... Anyway, I wrote about this last week on DeCipio. Now we're back in the... We had a 6-year reprieve from having to pick a team that we would root for to keep the Cardinals from winning the Pats.
That's true.
For the World Series.
Which is something we don't have to worry about it this year.
Now, though, I would like them to keep the Brewers from winning anything.
Correct. Correct.
The Nats would have been that team in 12. And that's why it would have really pissed us off that they blew it. Because, you know, they could have stopped the Cardinals. The Cardinals didn't win anything that year. They had won the World Series inexplicably the year before.
Correct. Yes, that was 10 years ago. And I'm going to save my story for how the Cubs contributed to that pennant for the Cardinals when we pull up.
Oh, yeah, I know. Carlos Marmol.
Yes, and Ryan Terrio getting a curveball that he could hit down the line. It's just painful, yeah. That Sunday game. We'll just consider that a teaser for 2011.
An undetermined week.
Well, one of these days we'll be doing some teams from the 80s. I'm looking forward to that. But I feel like we've almost exhausted.
We only have three left. Whole
tribune era of the night. Right. Night, right. We haven't done 1995. We haven't done 1993 off the top of my head. I think that's it. Right? 1990. We haven't done that 1990. But shit, we did 2000 on the other side of this one. So, I mean, kids, if you're a fan of Mark Grace and Sammy Sosa and Kerry Wood, I would hope to you've gotten your fill. And if not, then maybe Rick Aguilera and Benito Santiago have filled your cup.
So this game five, I'm looking at this game five, Cardinals Nats in 2012, which has nothing to do with the season we're talking about.
That's all right.
The Nats run Adam Wainwright, who's still fucking pitching.
The Cardinals, you mean?
No, the Nats run him in the third inning.
Oh, run him. They get him out of the game. Yeah,
he's
given
up seven hits and six runs.
I think 20-year-old Bryce Harper may have hit a home run.
They're up 6-0.
Yep. 6-0. Underestimating.
But then the Cardinals start chipping away. They score one in the fourth, two in the fifth, so it's 6-3. They score in the seventh. They make it 6-4. They make it 6-5 in the with a run in the top of the eighth. But the Nats get one back. So they got a 2-run lead going into the bottom of the ninth. And they bring in rookie Drew Storen.
A rookie.
Carlos Beltran with a double. Holiday grounds out. Alan Craig strikes out. Future kind of Cub. Then he goes spring training with the Cubs. All you got to do is get Yadi Molina out and you move on to the NLCS. Yadi walks. All you got to do is get David Freese out and you go to the NLCS. David Freese walks.
Jesus Christ.
Guess who gets the hit that ties the game for the Cardinals. We have mentioned him four times today.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. 2012. Yep. 2012. We're talking 2012 Cardinal that gets the huge. It's not Terry. You know, we haven't talked about him.
No.
He had to have been a 99 Cub, right?
He was not a 99 Cub. But his name came up. We're talking about terrible contracts.
I cry uncle.
Daniel Descalzo.
That far back?
He singles, ties the game. Then that's not enough. He steals second base.
Jesus Christ.
Then Pete Cosma, even worse player than Daniel Descalzo. He singles, scores two more runs. They scored four runs in the top of the ninth, and they win 9-7. Jesus and that wouldn't Christ. Have happened had Jim Riggleman still been around. He wouldn't have let that shit happen.
Nope.
Fucking Davey Johnson. What an asshole.
Well, I'm always a little bit bitter towards Davey, even though the Cubs prevailed in '84 because he was a natural, nemesis as being the manager of the Mets. But
so it's an interesting comparison. I don't know when. Maybe it's not the right one for this podcast, but so those the Mets of that of Davey Johnson's era. I guess they won. They only won one pennant.
Correct. They got knocked out of the 88 LCS. One World Series and one pennant. And only two playoff appearances in the pre-wildcard era. Yes.
So would you – is somebody at some point going to take a look at the Daryl Strawberry, Dwight Gooden, that era of Gary Carter, Keith Hernandez, Mets? and the Chris Bryant, Javi Baez.
Wow.
Anthony Rizzo Cubs.
How
with that and very parallel to 86, they almost didn't win the World Series either. In fact, correct, they almost didn't win the NLCS. Jim DeShays,
Billy Hatcher,
we'll have to have him on the pod. He can talk about the comeback. They had that ridiculous game six they had.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah, it could have been a game seven. Nolan Ryan was on that Astros team. That's a great point. I had not considered it. The obvious analogy for me, being a Chicago fan, has been the 85 Bears, and I think that's valid too, but it's a different sport, so it has its own different sort of interpretive qualities. Considering that the 86 Mets of that era, you say 86, just like right, 85.
You think about
Bears,
how they won 106 games, I think. Cubs won
between 84 and 88, I would target that as the, but even 89, we've talked about the Cubs, when the Cubs were fighting off the, and that was still the same nucleus. It wasn't like it wasn't a rebuilt ship. So, for a pretty significant period of time, that was a really good team that only made two playoff appearances, in a more selective era, but
yeah, these Cubs made four, but three NLCS in a row. The Cubs went to three NLCSs in a row when it was hard to get to NLCS because you had to win a series to get there, where the Mets won the division and won it. Now, a big difference would be for those Mets, the NL East was a bitch in those
It
games.
Was. We've talked about that too in 89.
So you had some really good all-time teams. The 84 Cubs, despite the fact they pissed it away in San Diego, that's a really good team. The 85 Cardinals is a really good team. The 86 Mets is a really good team.
Expos, always lurking. In 1987, there were 391 teams, I believe, in that division.
Now, the Mets in 88 run into Oral Hershiser.
Yep. Yeah, that's fair. And
so, and the ironic thing is, so I think now the Mets fans are weird, but the 86 Mets are a beloved,
because that's their last title, which is now a long time. We can say that.
The 2016 Cubs are always going to be that.
Right, like the 85 Bears.
But there's a lament with those Mets that they only won the one, and there'd be a lament for the Cubs that they only won the one. So it is more of a direct comparison than you might otherwise think.
Yeah, I mean, I would say at this point, barring injury, Chris Bryant's a Hall of Famer. We'll see about Baez. That Mets team only, Carter, I guess, might have been it. But some of those players are pretty damn good for that short period.
Yeah, I mean,
of time.
We know what happened to. We know why Daryl and Dwight aren't. It has nothing to do with their play. I mean, they both coke derailed both of them.
They indulged. Yeah.
Because Gooden, there's no way you could have looked at him in 1984 and thought that dude's not going to be a Hall of Famer.
No. And we'll have, obviously, because we've hardly picked apart any of those 80s teams, we'll have plenty of time to do that. And it's true. And
Hernandez is not a Hall of Famer, but he's in like,
no,
he's
like Mark
Grace.
Yeah.
In fact, he's so much like Mark Grace. The reason Mark Grace, War 17,
right,
was because of Keith Hernandez. It was his idol. He was from Missouri, and he,
And
he loved Keith Hernandez.
Yeah.
And he smoked like him. And of course, Keith Hernandez did coke, but Keith managed to get his shit together, unlike the other two.
All right. That's true.
Didn't he get indicted with all that shit in Pittsburgh?
Well, those trials are in 85. That shit became public in 85. Dave Parker and like Dale Barra and like
the Cardinals traded him because of that.
Is that right?
Yeah, they traded him for Neil Allen. There was no way they were going to. Why else would you have traded Keith Hernandez?
Who was like a very well celebrated alcoholic, if I'm not mistaken. Wasn't Neil Allen a drinker? Or am I speaking out of school?
I don't know. Daryl Porter was.
He was. I thought Neil Lennon. Maybe I'm wrong. If so, I apologize. For all we know, Neil Allen was a complete Mormon that has never.
So the Cardinals are retiring Ted Simmons' number. Is that kind of out of the blue?
Kind of beneath the Cardinals, considering that Ted Simmons is one of the few. If the Cardinals want to be Yankees light, we'll point out that Ted Simmons never played in a playoff game for the Cardinals.
I mean, I guess there wasn't a Hall of Fame ceremony last year, right? And he's not Harold Baines, but
no, he was a catcher for Christ's sake. Yeah, yeah.
So he gets in, so that's why they're going to retire his number. Boy, who's going to tell Bernard Gilkey that they're retiring Ted Simmons' number?
But I want to say, I Googled Neil Allen alcoholism. Neil Allen has a long and well-known history of battling alcoholism. Okay. During his playing career in the 80s, Allen's heavy drinking came up frequently. He was known to spend entire nights out drinking after games, never even going back to his hotel room before returning to the ballpark. Once while with the Mets in 1983, Allen went missing for days before asking the team for help with his alcohol problem. So I find it funny if it is true, and it might be.
Trade a cocaine addict for an alcoholic.
We're
just trading problems. I wonder if, and honestly, bringing an alcoholic to St. Louis is not, that's not exactly a recipe for success. I mean, he's going to hang out at Mike Shannon's.
Right, right. They're owned by a brewer. One of the more famous World Series participants from the 60s has this big restaurant right outside the stadium.
Well, and then years later, they would actually, two of their players would die in drunk driving accidents.
Right. Well, two? Yeah, Carlos Martinez, that Oscar Tavares is the other one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, of course, Josh Hancock.
Well, we know, because he was coming directly from Mr. Shannon's place of hospitality.
He plowed into a tow truck on the side of the...
And his father later on tried to sue the tow truck company, I believe.
Yeah, the Daryl Kyle thing was...
just bizarre.
His heart stopped in the hotel room, and they tried to blame it on marijuana. I found that hard. I think he may have smoked marijuana. I don't think it's what caused his heart to stop.
We don't want to go too deep in there because 2002 is going to be pretty thin.
That's right.
Otherwise,
yeah, and we've got a whole Joe Girardi speech to break down.
I think we covered 99, though. I'll say that.
Yeah, in fact, so much that we started talking about everything but 1999.
I know.
All right, so you're going on vacation, so there will be a short hiatus in remembering this crap, but I will be filling the void with other kinds of podcasts the next couple of weeks, so there will be plenty of pods for people to hear. And then one of the things that if you made it to the end of this podcast, you might as well find out. The idea is as the Cubs start trading their iconic 2016 world champions, not only will there be special editions of the newsletter that will come out, like I started with the Jock Peterson one, but Kyle and Sam and I are going, at least Kyle and I, we agreed that Sam was on vacation last week too. We're going to jump on and do reaction podcasts as those happen. So there will be plenty of content.
Awesome. Look forward to that.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be our Yu Darvish one was not a pleasant thing, and these will be even worse. Be a lot of venting. So, all right, well, that's the 1999 Cubs, and in a couple of weeks we'll get back at it and see who we end up with again. So,
I'm down. Thanks.
Many of us have herpes.